few minutes here, well, not even that long, but let's just worship the Lord in awe as we consider his words. His words aren't our words. His words are the words. So with words alone, Jesus created the heavens and the earth. Jesus' words will not pass away, even if heaven and earth did pass away. So the words of Jesus are much more than letters on a page or sounds floating through the air, because the Word was God before anything was made. And Jesus himself is that Word. The Word, Jesus, not only is God, not only created all of creation with words, but he then entered into that same creation, his own words made, and he showed us the way to live in this world. And Jesus has invited each of us to live in that same way. You know this. Jesus said of himself, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." So this morning I'm going to put a lot of focus on way and truth. That gives us life. But way and truth. Keep those two words in your mind. So as I said before, I wanted to understand John chapter 10, and I think the Lord was faithful in helping me understand. I definitely don't want to get up here and be sharing guesses. I want to share things that I think, yes, this is actually what the Bible is teaching. So as part of that, the specific meaning of the word "here" ended up being one of the keys I was looking for, even though I didn't necessarily know that when I started. So in John 10:27, Jesus starts off with, "My sheep hear my voice." And what does that word mean? Well, it means to yield obedience to that voice. It's not just listen to it with our ears. It's to take those words that we hear and actually yield to them, to do them. My sheep hear my voice. And that's, so if we were to expand and put some of that meaning underneath of the words, "My sheep hear my voice," it could read like this: "My sheep give obedience to the words of my voice, and I know them, and they follow me." Now, the next phrase, the word "know," is awfully important. So, and that's why I said look at John 15, because there's something in John 15 that helps us get an understanding of what this word "know," K-N-O-W, means. Because Jesus says in that verse, "Just as the Father knows me, I know the Father." And what this means for us is, at least for those of us who follow Jesus, is that that same deep, specific knowing that Jesus has with the Father is the same deep, specific knowing that Jesus has with each one of us who are his actual sheep. So if we expand John 27 again to put the meaning more clearly underneath the words, "My sheep give obedience to the words of my voice, and I know them with the same deep knowledge I share with God the Father, and they follow me." And so we know where this is going, the word "follow." Jesus preceded us. He went before us into this world. We are his sheep who are trying to be the same way that he is. So if we follow him, we follow him so that we can take his qualities into our own lives. That's life. So if we expand that meaning out fully, it's, "My sheep give obedience to the words of my voice, and I know them with the same deep knowledge I share with God the Father, and they follow me because I showed them the way to go and the way to be just like I am." So how did Jesus arrive at this? I'm talking about verse 27. I had you read verses 1 to 5. What's going on? Well, you've already read verses 1 to 5, and so verses 6 to 26, don't worry, you can go home and read that. I'm not going to do that here. But what I want you to understand is there is a big cast of characters in John chapter 10. We don't have time to go over all of them, and some of them aren't relevant to exactly what we're talking about this morning. But I want to frame this up for you so when you do read it at home, hopefully, that it'll make more sense, because a parable is not like we're used to learning and thinking. Parables require quite a bit of effort. If you read verse 6, you realize that they didn't understand what Jesus said, so they asked him, so he spent time explaining it. So anyway, Jesus can tell a parable in a way that we can't write an English essay and expect to pass. So when it comes to the door, Jesus is the door. But when it comes to the Good Shepherd, Jesus is also the Good Shepherd in this chapter. The gatekeeper, however, you might assume is Jesus, but it's not. There's some debate on what the gatekeeper actually represents, but it's probably either God the Father or God the Holy Spirit. Now there's shepherds, and when you read the word shepherd in this chapter, you should think pastor. Shepherd equals pastor in this parable, and much of the Bible for that matter anyway. But as we're going this morning, I'm going to say under shepherd to keep it clear and different from Jesus, who is the good shepherd. So Jesus is a good shepherd. There are under shepherds. Okay, so, and then there's sheep. Sheep are the true followers of Jesus. Just because you're sitting here this morning or watching online doesn't mean you're a sheep. You're a sheep if you've given your life to Christ and you're actually following him. That's what a sheep is. But then there's also thieves and robbers. These are the false shepherds, the false pastors. Okay? Maybe don't want to talk about that, but Jesus did, so. But then there's also hired hands. They're not true pastors, but they're also not false pastors, right? They're not true shepherds, but they're not false shepherds. They're not the thieves and the robbers. These are different. So you kind of think of it like this. A hired hand would be somebody who's a staff member at a church who has the title of a pastor, or gets called pastor, but doesn't have the spiritual gift of pastoring. That's the distinguishing trait. And their attitude, at least as Jesus teaches us, is that pastoring's just a job. If it gets too difficult, they leave. They abandon the flock. He's not speaking well of hired hands. So I want to narrow in on the relationships that relate to us here in this local church this morning. This would be a very long sermon if I don't keep narrowing it down. So, but I also want this to be as personal as I think Jesus intends it to be. I don't want this to be awkward or anything like that or confrontational, but Jesus is teaching something here, and we call ourselves a church, and we have a Bible in the name of our church, so what are we doing if we're not actually applying it in what we do and in our own lives? So Jesus has full and complete authority over the entire flock of sheep. Jesus is both the good shepherd and Jesus of the whole flock, and he's also the door by which the true members of his flock pass in and out. And it's not just in, it's also out, which is going to make more sense in a second. And Jesus isn't so much guarding the sheepfold as he is affirming and validating those who enter in and out of the door, which is the only legitimate and proper way to enter or exit the sheepfold. And I say he isn't so much guarding the sheepfold because he knows, he tells us there are some who are coming in other ways into the sheepfold, and he calls them the thieves and the robbers. Jesus delegates some authority to his true under-shepherds who do have the spiritual gift of pastoring. So each true under-shepherd has been given care over a smaller portion of the whole flock of Jesus, whole flock, by Jesus himself. This is so much more than just a job at a church for someone who actually has the spiritual gift of pastoring. Now, a little bit more setup. This parable isn't meant to be a complete picture of a local church structure. Okay, this parable doesn't mention elders. It doesn't mention, like, here's how you should structure and organize your church. This parable is about hearing Jesus. When there are many voices in the world, but there are many voices in a church that could be listened to. The parable doesn't even mean that pastors are the only people specific given spiritual gifts for building up a local church. If you've read Ephesians 4 verses 11, you know that there's 5 specific spiritual giftings. Apostles, prophets, evangelists, shepherds equals pastors, and teachers. Okay, there are 5 different spiritual gifts Jesus has given to build up the sheep. Under shepherds aren't a different group, class, caste, or special kind of person any more than teachers are, evangelists are, or the others are. Under shepherds are just sheep, like everybody else. And that's a good thing. And that's good for all of us. So this parable is primarily about the relationships between Jesus, the under shepherds, and the sheep. There's 6 different directions that can go. I'm not going to spell them all out, but This is what this parable is about: Jesus, his under-shepherds, and the sheep. So according to Jesus' parable, exactly how do under-shepherds lead a mini flock of Jesus' sheep? Well, this is where, put your eyes back to John 10, verse 3, which probably is still open before you. There's a lot of pronouns in verses 3 and 4. Honestly, I find it confusing. Took a while to figure out, like, who's the he and who's the him? Like, what, is it Jesus? Is it who? Is it what? In verse 3, this is talking about the under-shepherds, not Jesus. Okay, so if I spell out the pronouns, it would read something like this. The mini flock hear their under-shepherd's voice, and the under-shepherd calls his own sheep of his mini flock by name. And the under-shepherds lead, sorry, the under-shepherd leads his mini flock out into the world. This is an important thing. This is an important spiritual gift. It's important for us, the sheep. Okay, in John 10, 4, it's also interesting. It says this, lots of pronouns again. When he has brought out all of his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. He, him, all this kind of stuff. It's not Jesus. It's the under-shepherd being talked about again in this verse. So again, if we just kind of fill in the pronouns and make it clear, it would go something like this. When the under-shepherd has brought out all of his own mini flock of sheep, the under-shepherd goes before them. And that mini flock of sheep follow the under-shepherd, for the mini flock of sheep know their under-shepherd's voice. Your under-shepherds should know you. Hard to do in a big church like this, but they should know you. So be careful who you call a pastor. Lots of celebrity pastors, lots of this, lots of that. They don't know you. Someone in your actual life, a pastor, an under-shepherd, can actually get to know you. That's an important factor that shouldn't be overlooked. But to really grasp this verse, verse 4, the word brought is very important. So we think, okay, how obvious is that? The word brought, we all know what that means. Yeah, well, our English use of the word misses an awful lot. And if I were to say it in the way that I would, if I was going to be faithful to what it actually means, it'd be really loud, and I'd probably really startle you all. Okay? So I'm not going to do it. What it is saying, this word brought, what it does mean is like yelling the word go. Capital letters, exclamation point. Sheep, go. Not leave, abandon the church, but go get out in the world and do what you're supposed to do as a sheep. It's a command to cause the sheep to depart in haste, to send them out from the sheepfold so that they rush forward. If you picture a herd of animals bolting out of the pen, it's kind of rough. It's like, whoa, okay, here we go. Right? It's that kind of picture, that kind of idea. And it's the job of the under-shepherds to do that and then get out in front and then show how people to actually live in the world. So an under-shepherd actually is expected by Jesus, according to this parable, to send the sheep out into the world instead of letting us, rest in the sheepfold all the time or just hang out near the door where it feels safe. You're supposed to get out in the world and know how to do this. So, and if I personalize this, another thing this means is, if I were to approach either of the staff pastors here at this church, you know who they are, with a task that I'd like to see them doing, they have a mandate from Jesus to say to me, you go do it yourself. They might have to teach me how, but it's not my job to keep filling their day up with ideas and tasks. Or even if you kind of try and come at it with some kind of Christian church lingo stuff, where like, you know, pastors, the Lord's placed it on my heart that you should start up something here at the church. Well, the under-shepherd should very immediately look at you and say, okay, the Lord laid it on your heart. You go do it. Because in an elder-led church, which is what the Bible teaches, it's the elders who have authority to give the under-shepherds tasks that they're expected to do, but that's not up to us, the sheep. So So that's enough about the under-shepherds for now. What about the hired hands? Jesus makes a very clear distinction between the under-shepherds and the hired hands. These are two separate categories. Okay, so the true under-shepherds are true pastors because they have that spiritual gift of pastoring. The hired hand might be called a pastor, but that person lacks the spiritual gift, and they're employees of a church. Are we hearing Jesus with this? Let's consider a couple options. This ends well, don't worry. So if someone has a pastoral spiritual gift, but they are not in a paid position, they are actually an under-shepherd because they have that spiritual gift of pastoring. And I think we do hear Jesus in this church. There's ministry leaders, a whole bunch of other people who actually have that pastoring ability, that pastoring spiritual gift, and they're using that gift here in the church or parachurch kind of thing. So that's a good sign. There's another option, someone who has the pastoral spiritual gift, plus they have a paid position. So again, I think we're hearing Jesus well in this church because the two paid pastor people in this church, I think, quite clearly have the pastoral spiritual gift. So that's good. What about somebody who has no pastoral spiritual gift, but they are in a paid position? I think we're hearing Jesus on that because there aren't any of those at this church. And I think, considering these options, what this really means is that we've got elders who are willing to take their job of governance of this local church seriously. I have no hesitation highlighting that I think the elders are doing their work well. So you can see one over there, one back there, and I can't see where the other one went. Right there. So this is a good thing. I think this is a healthy church that is actually hearing Jesus and putting what Jesus says into practice. So what about the thieves and the robbers mentioned in John 10:1 and also again in John 10:8? These are the ones who don't use the door, but who enter into the sheepfold another way. These are the false shepherds. Hired hands are not false shepherds. They're just not properly qualified. But false shepherds, they're up to something very different. They are up to no good, and they intend wickedness. A thief is an embezzler or a pilferer. Thieves use stealth, and they steal from the flock for personal gain. A robber is a plunderer. And this all comes from the Greek. A robber is a plunderer. Robbers do not use stealth. They're much more obvious about what they're taking for their own personal gain. Okay, this is not easy stuff to talk about in the church. We like to read the Bible and think, okay, yeah, way back in Corinth or wherever, they had problems with hired hands and false pastors and false shepherds, but surely not us. Well, Jesus says we got to be on the lookout. And Jesus is describing that thieves and robbers, these false shepherds, these false pastors, they use words falsely. Okay, but it can be done stealthily. And Jesus says this, you recognize these words. Jesus says of the false shepherds, you'll recognize them by their fruits. In Matthew 7 is where he says that. You've heard this verse, wolves, bad fruit, that stuff. But bad fruit, this is a farming church, fruit takes a while to show up, especially if it's a tree. Bad fruit can take a long time to show up. It's hard to spot until it's there, and that can take a long time. So what Jesus is teaching here in John 10, I think is brilliant, because he's teaching a far faster way to figure out who is a thief and a robber. And it goes like this. He's teaching us that if we know, like the sheep, if we know Jesus' word with accuracy, we can reveal a false shepherd quickly because their words don't quite align or don't easily align to the words of Jesus. We can hear the misaligned words far sooner than bad fruit can be revealed. So yes, you can figure someone out by bad fruit, but you can also figure out somebody by the misalignment of how they're speaking about the words of Jesus. But you have to know the words of Jesus. And every sheep is supposed to follow the voice of Jesus. My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. So just as an aside, if you claim to follow Jesus, but you don't live his words, then you might want to think again about how seriously you are actually following Jesus. And like I said before, Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. And for a moment here, I want to consider way and life, or sorry, way and truth as clearly as I can. So when it comes to a true under-shepherd, that person speaks true words of Jesus, and he uses those words in a way that Jesus uses them. Like there's a parallel, there's an alignment. But a false shepherd might speak true words of Jesus, but does not use those words in the same way. There's a misalignment. But the only way you can figure that out is to actually know the words of Jesus and the way in which Jesus speaks. And the thing about the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, there's enough narrative and accounting or recounting of what Jesus said and did to get a feel for the way to do it. It takes work, it takes effort, which is why simply reading your Bible isn't enough. You have to be pondering it, you have to be considering it, putting yourself in the shoes of thinking, okay, if Jesus said that to me, what would I have to change? Or if I were to say those same words that Jesus is saying, could I do it authentically? Could I do it truthfully? Would I be hiding something while I'm doing it? Can I get that alignment with his words into my own life? And again, Jesus places the responsibility onto the sheep, yes, the under shepherds, but they're sheep too, to carefully attune to his words whenever we listen to others claiming to speak Jesus' words. Or did you think you could sit back and relax now that we have two pastors on staff here at the church? Wrong you are if you thought that. Every sheep has this ongoing job given by the Lord to judge whether an under-shepherd's words align to the words Jesus spoke. Likewise, every sheep still has the responsibility to judge whether the way the under-shepherd speaks is the same way Jesus used his words. So how exactly are we sheep supposed to hear Jesus through an under-shepherd? And this applies to teachers as well. You can picture it like this, or at least this is how I picture it. I'm not sure how you're going to picture it, but I picture an under-shepherd with Jesus standing in behind them. And this really works well right about now because you're all out there, I'm standing here teaching, and in behind is the cross. So if you visualize this, you are watching and listening to what I'm saying, and you can imagine Jesus in behind me, and you should be picturing it coming the other way. Does Jesus say the same kinds of things that I'm saying? Because he's true, and to some degree, I'm trying to get as close as I can. I'm not going to get it perfect, but how close is it? Or how off is it? Because that's your job when you're sitting out there, is to be sitting there thinking, well, is what Andrew or whoever is standing in this pulpit saying aligning to what you know of Jesus, or is it not? So let me just spell it out. You should be doing that to me right now. You should have been doing it the whole time I've been up here, every time I've been up here. And just so you know, when I'm sitting out there, I'm doing it to whoever is standing here. And I love it when I hear somebody speaking in a way that aligns closely to the words of Christ. That's great. That's what I come here for, at least as far as the sermon and the teaching goes. So I do it to you, do it to me. Right? Because each sheep has the duty to see if the voice and the words of someone else align to the words of Jesus. And there just is no way around the fact that we must know the words of Jesus and develop a relationship with his way of speaking the truth. We serve a God who speaks words that we can understand. I know many people wish God would speak it as a voice to our ears, but he has spoken it, and it's been recorded in the Bible. By faith, you can accept that Jesus is himself the truth, and thereby hear Jesus. By faith, you can accept that the Bible is truth, and hear Jesus that way. I'd like to close with this. Jesus said, "My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me." So my prayer this morning is simply this. May these words be true of each and every one of us. So, whoever's leading communion, if you'd like to come on up.
As you can see, the music team is coming up too. I'm going to lead us in an introduction to prepare our hearts for communion, and then as the elements are distributed, we're going to sing a song together, and then I will come back up and we will partake together. But I actually